Welcome to Afternoon Tea with Richard Wiseman, with me, Richard Wiseman. In this episode, I chat to well-known psychiatrist and author Raj Basoh. Instead of taking afternoon tea with Raj, I caught up with him after he'd interviewed a leading politician as part of the Edinburgh Book Festival. Surrounded by the gentle hum of book lovers, the two of us chatted about the science of success, the self-help industry, and his favourite type of biscuit. Raj, thank you very much for making time today. We're in the book festival here at Edinburgh. You've just been interviewing...
Sermin Campbell.
Oh, how did that go?
It went very well. He's a very interesting politician. He used to be the leader of the Liberal Democrats. An elite athlete. He was probably the fastest man in the United Kingdom over 100 metres, 200 metres, 300 metres, and the relay in the early 1960s.
And were you analysing him, interviewing him? I mean, he wasn't crying when I saw him, so he was all right, he was happy.
I was interviewing him, but I was also analysing him. We were trying to do something that I often do with people like him who are very successful, which is to think about what's the secret of their success. No. What's the secret of their success? And so we were unpacking that, and he had a very interesting, difficult relationship with his father when he was younger, and I wondered whether his need to compete, because for example he would train so hard, this is Ming, would train so hard that he would throw up at the end of a training session. Incredible commitment and dedication. So I was unpacking where that came from, and he had a difficult relationship with his dad. His dad became very...
It's not obvious where it... Oh, I see what you mean. Sorry, okay, where the motivation came from, right.
Yes.
And, I was going to say, being a medical man, you should know where it came from.
And we were exploring the fact that maybe it arose out of the fact that his difficult relationship with his father could be dealt with in some way by being incredibly successful as an elite athlete. And he tells a wonderfully poignant story about how he became the first Scot to break some athletic record for 60 years, and his dad jumped over the fence that separated the
broke
crowd.
Another one.
The crowd from the athletes. I knew this would be a nightmare.
No, agreeing
to do this.
No, that's very kind of you. It's very kind. Thank you. Yes.
I hurdled the fence and ran over and shook Ming's hand. And this was a guy who normally wasn't very demonstrative at all. So that, you know, I thought that was really interesting.
That is interesting. Okay, so in one sentence, what is the secret of his success?
One sentence, I don't know.
Yeah,
but I was exploring some possibilities with him. But he, like a lot of people who are competitive and successful, find it quite difficult to articulate that. And I think that one of the things in our culture, particularly in the UK, is it's not easy to be open about ambition and drive in the way that I worked in the US. I worked at Johns Hopkins for a while. Americans are much more open about ambition. They're much more interested in talking directly about the pursuit of success. Whereas in Britain, if you're successful, you have to... The backstory has to be that it was an accident. And that, you got lucky
on the day.
It
was just chance.
Yeah.
It's just chance.
You see a British athlete being very successful at the press conference, it was, I got lucky on the day. And you're meant to look very surprised as well.
So that's why you're here. Now, normally we'd be doing this as afternoon tea over in my flat, but it's a very busy day for you, so thank you for fitting it in. If we were over there, though, we would be enjoying your favourite biscuits. What's your favourite biscuit? A question I'd imagine comes up quite a lot in interviews with you.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because often I do domiciliary visits, and the patients I'm visiting who I've got to know very well will often make me tea.
Ooh.
And so they will often make a cake or bring out biscuits.
Right. So this is somebody with a psychiatric problem making you tea.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
How lovely. Yes. Right, okay.
A bit like today, in fact.
Very similar. Very similar. Does that not
normally
work?
They do a better tea than what I'm getting here, by the way.
So you're getting nothing.
I'm getting nothing. Yeah.
So what biscuit? Now, you avoided the biscuit question there.
I hoped you wouldn't notice that.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm very worried about product endorsement at this moment.
It doesn't
in time.
Well, it can just be a general thing. Ginger nuts?
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah, yeah.
No.
Not ginger nuts.
No, shortbread.
Shortbread.
A very
yes. Scottish choice, yes. There. Okay,
yes.
Very good. Very
Some
good.
People would say a politician's answer.
That is actually. It is a bit. That's a bit. Oh, where am I? Scotland. Shortbread. Oh, I love shortbread, me.
No, but I do like shortbread.
Okay, right. Okay. And does that say anything about you psychologically?
It probably means I'm going to keel over and die very shortly because of the high cholesterol
right.
Involved in very good shortbread.
Okay. Yes. So self-help. is one of the topics which I wanted to chat about. Now, what I'm curious about self-help, do you think, in general, self-help, people, you know, have a problem of some sort, and they may not go to a professional, they think, I know, best sort it out myself, a bit like sort of DIY. They go to the bookstores. Are they well served by what's in there?
It's a very good question, and psychologists have begun to take an interest, an academic interest, in this. And the key word is bibliotherapy. So there's a word for it now, which is having treatment through reading books. And that's self-help books. Though, of course, there is bibliotherapy in the sense of reading great literature, and whether that might also be helpful. And people have been starting to research it, actually, and comparing, doing clinical trials, comparing bibliotherapy with seeing a psychologist or a psychotherapist. I think that one of the problems is that when someone goes to a bookshop, they have to, first of all, self-diagnose. In other words, they've got to say to themselves, aha, I've got obsessive-compulsive disorder. The trouble I've noticed, because I've written a lot of self-help books, and a lot of people who've bought the books have corresponded with me or come to events like this when I'm doing a book signing, and I think that one of the significant problems is the self-diagnosis one, which is very often people are not actually making the correct evaluation of the diagnosis, and therefore they're often not reading the right advice. So the books that I have written have been more generic about how to improve your mental health generally, regardless of the diagnosis, and that's what I've been conscious of that issue. There is a book I've written with the Royal College of Psychiatrists called The Mind, A User's Guide, which the first half of the book is an attempt to help people diagnose ordinary lay people, because each chapter is about a different aspect of psychiatry. But I think particularly in psychiatry, self-help is important, because in my clinical experience, if you suffer from a psychological problem, you often, particularly in Britain and many parts of the world, don't go for help very rapidly. I've seen patients who've been hearing voices for 20 years before they actually came to get help. Whereas if you develop a physical problem, if you start to pee blood, you tend to go to your doctor straight away. Yeah. You tend not to wait a long time.
So that's people with, as it were, a problem, the way they may go to a psychologist. Obviously, a lot of the literature is meant as more sort of self-improvement. And that end of things, do you think there's an issue there with people trying to use this literature?
Yes, I think that that you're making a very interesting point about self-improvement. It's about success. There's a literature on success, how to achieve your goals. And I'm going to sound very cynical now, but I think the underlying message of all those books is success is easy and it's quick. And it's like what I call the anodyne cure. You know, it's a quick, easy removal of your headache. And if you just buy this book, you will become rich, or begin to date Jennifer Aniston, or whatever your goals are. And I'm afraid the bad news is that anything worthwhile in life does not usually arrive easily. It usually involves a lot of hard work. And the trouble is that any book that says that on the blurb will not sell. And that's often the conflict I have with my publishers.
Yeah.
That I'm often saying, this, to get this goal will require suffering. Right. And they go,
Yeah, the big book of suffering is not going to sell, is it? Let's be honest.
That's right. But actually, I think that meaningful suffering, I mean, once you understand that the suffering is what the purpose of it is, and the fact that it is usually time limited to some extent, but I think one of the heart of our modern cultural problems is the avoidance of suffering. That actually, if you spend your life avoiding suffering, paradoxically, in Hinduism, incidentally, because my parents are Hindus and I come from a Hindu tradition, Hinduism says that suffering is at the heart of the universe, and it's the attempt to avoid suffering that leads to more suffering. It sounds paradoxical. Okay. I mean, I teach medical students, and they classically come to me and say, I want to get a great grade at the end of year exam. How do I do that? And I say, well, you will have to stop watching television and socializing for a bit and spend your life in the library and revising hard. And then the usual response is, no, I don't want to do any of that, but how do I get a good grade? Why are you keeping the secret from me? Why are you mentioning hard work and suffering? I don't get it.
Yeah, I want to have a good time and I want to achieve.
Yes.
It's as simple as that.
Yes.
Now, talking of your books, Simply Irresistible, just one small point on that. There is a picture of you on the cover of the Simply Irresistible book, under the word Simply Irresistible.
Yes, yes.
Was that your decision? I'm just curious.
No, that wasn't my idea at all, and we did berate them because we thought amongst other things it would attract negative press comments.
No! How could that be, Raj?
I know.
No.
I know. But actually, it became a top 10 bestseller, despite the fact that my picture was on the front.
Okay. It's a good book. It's a good book. I enjoyed it. Now, talking of good books, is there any recommendation you would make if someone's out there want a general sort of self-development book, something to improve their lives, possibly rapidly? Is there any book you would recommend, just out of interest, that I might have written recently?
Well, your luck book.
Oh, right, okay.
I think is
the other one.
Oh, sorry. What, the gorilla book?
Got a new one out for 59 seconds.
Oh, right, yeah. Okay, yeah. Right, okay. That one is pretty good as well.
I've pushed you into that.
Yes. No, but actually, the luck book I thought was making a very interesting point, and I have actually noticed that I've taken on one of your bits of advice in that book, which is about the fact that if you take more chances, you put yourself in situations which you don't often do, unlikely or unexpected things are more likely to happen. For example, I have noticed that I'll often go to an event or do something now, and my wife will say, well, why are you doing that? You know it's going to be a waste of time. But I'm doing that because I'm opening up the possibility of something happening, which wouldn't... I'm not open to that possibility if I just lead my life in the usual routine manner.
A bit like what we're doing now.
Exactly.
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 Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm asking everyone this, in terms of an inspirational book, which book do you think, as you look back, has inspired you most out of the many, many hundreds you will have read over time?
Well, recently, I mean, I think in terms of a very good self-help book that inspired me when I've been writing my self-help books is a book by Richard Carlson. I think it's Richard or is it Robert? I think about Richard Carlson, called Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, which was a massive bestseller in the US. And I think there have been some follow-up books because it was such a big success. I've met him, actually. He's a lovely guy. And he's got a proper academic background as well. I mean, I know that's going to make me sound a bit grumpy and pedantic, but he writes with some knowledge of the actual literature and the field. And it's actually a very sensible book for chronic worriers. Don't Sweat the Small Stuff. And I liked the fact that it was a very good sensible psychological advice, but it was written in a beautiful way, and it was written in a very inspirational manner. The trouble in the field, of course, is that the books that are written in the most inspirational manner are tend to be a bit more contentless in terms of hard science.
Yeah.
But I think his book captured both.
I'm very conscious of the time, so just to round up, I'm going to ask you a question now. You've been talking about Ming and the secret of his success. What's the secret of your success? If you had to analyse yourself, I could do it for you, but it's my day off, actually. So what's the secret of your success?
I think that one of the secrets is that from a very young age, I knew I wanted to be a psychiatrist, from an alarmingly young age. In fact,
how young?
About 12, which many people at the age of 12 don't know what a psychiatrist is. Mm. It's a bit worrying that I did know.
Yeah, that is worrying.
What a psychiatrist was. And had the appointment card to prove it. But the reason I knew what a psychiatrist was is my parents have both PhDs in social sciences, and they read a lot of psychology, and their books were always lying around. And they're also incredibly liberal, so they didn't mind at the age of 12 what I read. They didn't censor me at all. I remember reading a PhD on prostitution, for example,
right,
at that age.
Okay.
Not the whole thing. I just skipped to the pictures.
Right, that's right, yes. Yeah, life could have been so different if that would have inspired you.
That's right.
Yeah.
There was a book written by a famous professor of psychology, perhaps the most published psychologist of the 20th century, Hans Eysenck. Mm. Very controversial psychologist, because many people felt that he, for example, had some controversial views about race and IQ, and also some very, what were often regarded as peculiar ideas about links between personality and cancer. But he wrote a book called Know Your Own Personality, which was a book that you did personality testing in it, and it diagnosed you. And I was 12, I read this book, did the personality testing, and the book diagnosed me as a neurotic extrovert.
No!
I know. And
did you ask for your money back? So it's broken. Another one.
And I was just stunned by this technology that someone who'd never met you could in some way know you. And so I resolved to get into this field at that point onwards, and ended up working at the hospital that he worked at. But, you know, funnily enough, there's something very interesting about that fundamental tension right there, which is the notion there's a science of the mind, that the mind is governed by laws. I mean, a lot of people in the arts were surrounded by people in this book festival today are very anti that idea, and they want to think of the mind as mysterious, and that you can't classify people or categorise them, and that the mind is more random and spontaneous.
I think they're often threatened by the idea that you can categorise people, actually, and you can predict what they're going to do.
Yeah, I think people are very threatened by that, whereas I have always found that liberating, because it meant you can learn something about the mind, but also learn to control your own mind. Mm. But anyway, I think that book was very influential in me choosing psychiatry. But if from the age of 12 you know what you want to do, so you pick the right GCSEs, you pick the right A-levels, you choose the right medical school. I went to a medical school that had a strong psychology degree as part of the curriculum. You see what I mean? You're tending to make the right decisions that will end you up in the right place. And I think just fortuitously, I'm just very lucky to have known from a very early age that I wanted to do a particular thing, and that I've then always done that thing. Now, some people would also say, in a way, that's been a trap, because maybe I would have enjoyed doing something else, and maybe I've been a bit too focused on one set of tram lines, as it were. But I do think that if you talk to Ming, for example, people who, as is increasingly the vogue or fashion, kind of drift into their 30s or 40s, still not knowing what they want to do, I think those people have a slightly tougher time. Though, of course, there are people who in their 60s, 70s and 80s suddenly choose to become a novelist and write a book, a prize-winning
but
novel.
They're rare. I think most people do start young.
Well, it depends on the field you go into. But if you're going into a competitive field where you have to compete with other people, knowing early what you want to do and going for it is helpful. But the other thing I would say is that because I wanted to do that, if you want to be a psychiatrist, you have to go to medical school. If you want to go to medical school, you have to do subjects like anatomy and stuff, which are not really very popular with psychiatrists or people from a psychological background. So the other thing that it meant was I had to do stuff I really didn't want to do. We come back to the notion of suffering and hard work in order to get where I wanted to be. And being forced to do that and learning to do that, I think, has been very helpful. And going back to these medical students I teach, they want to avoid the difficult stuff or the bad stuff in order to get where they want to be. But to be aware that you're going to have to do things you don't really want to do in order to end up where you want to be is a very useful realisation, I think.
So starting young and being prepared to suffer and knowing what you want to do.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Oddly enough, my children seem to have accepted this philosophy and have rejected it wholesale.
What can you do? Raj, I could speak to you all day. It has been fascinating. I know you've got a plane to catch. Thank you very much for finding the time. And next time we do it, we'll do it with shortbread.
Thank you very much.